can't get. Think you're something I say you're nothing. Cause cruelty is your only instinct. You think you've come to drag me down, but I'm not underground.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Artie Kornfeld.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the spirit of the Woodstock Nation, you know, the spirit that you have inside your heart, you know, the feeling that you have for personal freedom in the land of the free and the home of the brave, you know, not the Braves, because I'm a Yankee fan. Tonight's a very special night for me because Shelly Yachus, you could mention Shelly Yachus' name to any of the albums that you have in your collection. You know, get the lead out. Ask Santana. Ask anybody whether you worked on it or not. Shelly Yachus is one of the forerunners. I mean, you wouldn't have the performances by Hendrix. You wouldn't have the way Shelly took pieces of equipment and created a whole other form of recording. And I just spotted Shelly the minute I saw him, and Shelly Yachus, say hello to the world, because we probably have about 300,000 to 500,000 people right now. And what a pleasure it is to, first of all, it's you and me, Shelly, and it's so wonderful that we're here together, you know. And that's from the heart. So I'm just going to say up front so you people know right now. I'm just going to tell you, just to tell you some of the stuff that my dear friend Shelly Yachus has done as an engineer, a second engineer, you know, aside from the fact that he was a vice president of A&M and built these incredible studios for A&M. And just to mention it slightly, you know, Shelly's work as an engineer with John Lennon, the Ramones, U2, Tom Petty, Van Morrison, Alice Cooper, the band, Blue Oyster Cult, Dire Straits, Don Henley, Madonna, on and on, Stevie Nicks, the Pointer Sisters, Lou Reed, Bob Seger, Susan Vega, Warren Zevon, Elliot Murphy, actually, even going to the point of assisting on Dionne Warwick, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, and actually even work with Frank Sinatra in the studio. So Shelly Yachus, one of the nicest and most brilliant people I've ever met, one of the best friends you could ever have. And Shelly, welcome. Welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say after that introduction. I'll tell you what, that's tough to follow. Maybe I should just be quiet and let you talk.
I'm the best salesman for other people. I sell other people great.
You do.
But you don't have to. You know, your work is, you know, the fact that, okay, folks, here we are, you know, I'm already happening. I think we were at, was it A&R or Record Plant when we first hooked up? It was A&R, right?
A&R
I think the first thing we met on was, aside from seeing each other around the studio, because, you know, when you work in the studio, you get locked to that studio, and if you work with an engineer and you love it, you get locked, and it could be a five-year run. And with Shelly and I, whether we were together or not, watching each other, you know, grow, it's such a wonderful thing to see, you know, and what it did for music and how it kept us all going, you know, when the stuff, you know, after we conquered and beat back the disco, beat back terrible hard rock stuff that didn't really make it, you know. Not that all hard rock didn't make it. Shelly, your dad had a studio, right, when you were young?
Yes, he did. I grew up in that studio. I was very fortunate to have a dad who was in this business, because when I was, you know, like 10 years old, I was going to the studio with him, you know, on weekends and during the summer, and I was a gopher there and, you know, go for coffee, and it was great because I got to see what was great about my dad's studio, and as I got older, in my teens and stuff, I got to see what wasn't great about it and how to make it better. And, you know, every studio has its pros and cons, but as I started to listen to records that were done in the rest of the world, I realized that he was putting out a pretty great product, but there were things that, you know, there were things that I started to hear. I started to get my own opinion about how things should sound, I was growing, and I remember being 10 years old when I said to my dad, hey, when could, because they could cut lacquers there, they could cut reference discs there, and whether it was 45s or whatever it was, so the client could take it home and actually hear it, you know, off of a disc, so from, you know, after it was done on tape, and I remember saying to him, hey, Dad, when can I learn to cut a ref? And he said, well, when you can see over the top of the table. And that was when I was about 14, and I was 10 when I asked the question. And, you know, the one thing that I learned in that studio was how to listen. Everyone hears, but not everyone listens. And I was doing tape copies for my dad one time for a client of the studios, and they were for commercials, and I did 50 copies, and he basically said to me, all right, I'm going to spot check these, and they had this little Wallensack machine that if there was even a little ripple in the tape or something, it would show up anything, because they didn't want to have any problems on the radio where the agency would get upset that the commercial wasn't playing right, and the client would get upset and all that, so we would spot check these, and he came across one that had a dropout, and for the audience out there that doesn't know what it is, it's just for a moment that the sound either disappears or just reduces in volume, but it happens so quick sometimes that you can barely hear it, although on the radio with all the limiters and stuff, it could be more apparent. And he played it for me, and he said, did you hear that? And I said, hear what? And so he played it for me a number of times until finally, I mean, many, many times over and over again until finally I heard it. And I said, you mean that was there the other 9 times you played it? And he said, it was there. And from that moment on, I was probably about 16 years old. From that moment on, I listened to things differently. I just heard differently. My focus was different, and it was one of the most valuable things that I could have ever learned, other than the other things that I had learned being, you know, watching my dad run a business with his brother and, you know, do many different aspects of, be involved in many different aspects of the music business, including being a songwriter and stuff like that, and a studio manager, and his brother was an engineer, so...
Well, you know, I'd like to thank your dad because, you know, I little fast forward, I got to get the benefit of all this stuff that Shelley had learned. And
well, you gave me a shot. You know, I was this young guy that was an assistant to these great engineers. I was very fortunate. When I went to New York, when I moved from Boston to New York, I got a job at A&R Studios, and it was a very popular place, and including you were one of the clients there, and I was assisting a lot of terrific engineers, and I was able to take what I learned at my dad's studio, the building blocks, the being able to hear, and get the rest from these guys, and use whatever the rest of my personality was, interject that into... And it became me, you know, a combination of all of these things and experiences that came into my life, and you know, it was invaluable. And like I said, you gave me a chance. You know, it's not every day that somebody as experienced as you would say, hey, I like this kid. You know, I want him to work on my album. It's great.
Well, I just, you know, I mean, we had been in the studio, you know, when you were a second, and I remember what happened, and I think it might have been the Artie Cornfield tree. I think it was Bert Summer. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember that for some reason, I think it was Roy, which is who actually was a mentor to Shelley. And the way the circle goes is, I knew Roy, who actually taught Shelley a lot of what he knows, and, you know, at least he put more into his computerized mind than Shelley has. You know, it's incredible. And the other engineer couldn't make it, and I just always picked up on Shelley, and we connected, and I loved the guy immediately, and I loved what he was doing. You know, if it was a small thing, he put so much into it, you know, that it became a major thing when it came to having a finished record. And so I just said, I said, Shelley, you think you could handle first chair on this, you know? And you said, yeah. And that led to, like, I think about 1,000 hours of studio work together on 4 different projects, like one after the other. It was like, and did we have a good time too, you know?
Yeah, we really did. We really did.
Yeah, and it was the music, and, you know, I guess people listen, they don't really go to this place, you know, on interviews and stuff, because it would have to be people that have done it, and just to share it, and, you know, just us being on tonight is giving people that are listening to know that if they keep at it, and they keep learning, and they listen to the Shelley Yacuses of the world. Now, there aren't many everybody out there, because I would put Shelley in the top 5 engineers, you know, in my mind, in the entire industry, and that includes the guys from England, because I brought the Johns brothers over first, Glenn and his brother, and signed him to Capo, and Shelley was there, and God Almighty, it was almost like I would think that I wanted to have a certain EQ on a guitar, and I swear, Shelley would already have it done. He'd already have it set up for me. And all I'd have to say is, Shelley, that's a big joke to us, you know, because I would always say, Shelley, it was our joke, more mid-range on the bass, you know. which is actually a thing that some engineers, what they do is they want to show that they're big. And Shelley never had to do that. But what they do is you ask them to do something, and they wouldn't do it, and then they'd be checking you out because they did nothing. So if you said, oh, yeah, I really hear the change, and they did nothing, you know. So you never had to worry about that with Shelley. But you did know you were going to get the best that this artist has, you know. And you were such a, you know, you were such a joy to be around. And, you know, I guess, you know, people don't know that in the studio you bond so deeply, you know. And it's almost like a sexual experience. It's like a totally orgasmic thing.
People are going to get the wrong idea here.
Nah, you know what I mean? Yeah, we haven't had sex in years, Shelley, you and I.
You know, we can't forget to talk about Roy Sokala, who was really...
But I just, the weird thing is, Shelley, is that I discovered Roy Sokala. That was so weird that I produced his wife when he had us in the studio. And the way the circle is so small, and it was in those days, you know, because out of New York, I would say probably out of the top 30 records in the country, in our loop in New York, probably out of 30, we'd have maybe 14 of the top 20 records in the country. You know, all done by this group of musicians and this group of totally dedicated to music people. Never really did it for the money, figured we could make a living at it, but the love of music and Shelley's love of sound. So, you know, and that's what's good, because Shelley covered all the stuff that I didn't know. And I really learned from Shelley, you know, because I learned by working with him. And a very dear friendship developed. Very touching to tell you where Shelley's at before we get into me saying, what was it like with John Lennon in the studio and all the stuff that people would ask you. I'll just tell everybody, it was so touching to me because Shelley was getting married and there was a table of, people whose names you don't know and I may leave out because I don't think, it's time for me to bring them in or they belong in the conversation because it's about Shelley. But everything was just we worked so hard. God Almighty, I pushed Shelley like crazy. We did 14 hours. Take a nap for a half hour and then go back and do 14 more hours and love it. It was such an exquisite, the pain of sound is so incredibly wonderful, isn't it?
I'll tell you what, dude, it must be in our blood already, because when I get away from it, I miss it dearly and I got to come back to it. And, you know, there are times when I'm doing other things in the music business other than mixing and for periods of time, or recording, and I really miss it. And then I get back to it, and you know, there's something about it. There's something about the thing that goes on in the control room that unless you've experienced it, you haven't experienced it. And there's nothing like hearing your stuff on the radio and then working in your control room or a control room and working on the next project. And once you hear your stuff on the radio, it changes everything. It's like your whole perspective. And also, sitting behind an engineer as an assistant engineer, I'll never forget, as an assistant, you listen to what all these engineers are doing as they're recording and mixing, and you're thinking about what you would do, if anything, differently. And you're saying to yourself, wow, these guys are so amazing. How do they make these sounds? And you begin to learn. But once you sit in that chair with that engineer, everything changes sound because you're 6 feet closer to the speakers, and it's like relearning the thing. But what you were just talking about, that whole thing about the making of music, there's something that goes on in the control room. You don't have to have a dad in the music business to be able to learn how to do this or to appreciate it. There's that magic thing. And there's this bonding that goes on in the control room because the artists, when you're in the control room with these artists, they start to relax and they start to really bare their souls. And to get that close to someone and them allowing you to get that close is an amazing thing. And there's a lot of things that go on in the control room that you hear in the control room that are just unsaid, things that would never be discussed outside the control room walls about their personal life and their professional life. And it's sort of an unsaid thing that you just don't discuss it. But
what you're saying, Shelley, is so important to people out there that are starting out, because I mean, people think I'm crazy, but we really used to actually have a setup where we could broadcast from the studio to a car parked five stories down. Was it on 7th Avenue or 6th? And we would actually broadcast to cars, to a car in the street, and we'd go down, running down to hear the playbacks to see how it was going to sound on radio, you know, to make sure that we didn't miss anything. Let me ask you a question. I can't help but, you know, because I've asked it to a lot of guys, you know, I've spoken to a lot of guys because he was a friend of mine too, like, what did it feel like for you to all of a sudden be, it didn't just happen overnight because you had already done your work with, I think with Alice Cooper and with the Oyster Cult and Dire Straits, but what did it feel like to walk in and be there with John Lennon, you know?
Well, it was amazing. I mean, you know, I'm sitting next to this guy who's been around the block 300 times and worked with the best in the world, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, is he going to figure out that I don't know what the hell I'm doing?
So right.
I'm thinking, all right, I mean, I got to give this guy what he's used to getting, and he was one of the Beatles, and it's some of the greatest sounding records in the world, and I just realized all I can do is what I can do. I just have to be the best I can be with my God-given talent, and hope he likes what I'm doing for him, and he did. And I think that it helped that George Martin, when he produced the Beatles, they worked with Jeff Emmerich, who was a very young engineer at the time.
Right.
And I think that the Beatles got used to working with young guys or newer guys, and not 100%, but a lot of it, that they were comfortable. And John was really comfortable with me, and we made some really terrific music together. And, you know, John was the kind of guy where he just wanted to make great music. That's all he wanted to do. He didn't think about what other people thought he should do. He made the kind of music that he wanted to make. He made it feel good to him. He did his vocals until he was happy with them. And, you know, to see somebody that's into music and their own music in that way is really an inspiring thing. I remember one day driving into the session, and I hearing All You Need Is Love on the radio, And when I got there, I said, "Hey, John, I heard All You Need Is Love. Is that an orchestra or is that like a mellotron?" And he said, "No, mate, it's the effing London Philharmonic. What are you kidding?" And he says, "I will tell you one thing." He said, "There are no drums on that record." And I said to him, "How's that possible?" And he said, "One of the Beatles was holding an upright bass by the neck. And he said, Ringo was hitting the strings on that bass with drumsticks." And he said, "The clack of that sound sounds like a snare drum, but it's not." And he said, "Somebody else was shaking a tambourine." And when I went home that night, it was on, they balanced it so that the drum sound was on one side. So if I turned one speaker off, I could hear it. And sure enough, as soon as you know what it is, you hear that sound and you go, "Wow, that's what it is. It's not a snare drum."
Well, don't you feel amazing? Well, don't you feel that we all became that much better? And you know what? So did John, because John listened to what we were doing too. Because I remember, you know, in my book, I tell the story about what John Lennon beat on my leg in the studio, and I was in with you. Remember, I told you when I got back, you know, I was talking to John, because remember, Linda was hanging out in the studio with them, you know, and that was the famous John Lennon beating on Artie Cornfield's leg. He was
he liked to visit other people's rooms in the complex. You know, if he was working at record plant, he liked to hear what other people were doing, and he shared his music with other people. And you know, he just had this natural feel for what worked with music, what instruments worked together. You know, I did Walls and Bridges with him. I worked on Imagine with him. I worked on the Rock and Roll album with him. And there were other engineers on those albums as well that, you know, nobody in this business ever does anything by themselves. So I don't want to sound that way, because it takes sometimes teams of people, whether you're working together or separately, to make something great.
Right. And there is no superstar at that point. It's the music and the product that really counts more than our own self, you know.
Absolutely, it's bigger than it's bigger than all of us. There's some famous pictures. There's some famous pictures that Bob Gruen took of Walls and Bridges, where it shows John and I sitting at the console. There were two pictures. One, we're sitting in chairs at the console, and the other one, I'm sitting on the edge of the console. He's sitting in a chair, and then the band, which was this great band, was like in a semicircle behind him. We're all listening back. And Bob Gruen took these pictures where he wasn't using a flash. And you didn't realize he was even in the room after a while. And it appeared to be even like maybe the second engineer moving around the room, so nobody would notice. And he got these incredibly candid photographs. First of all, he's a great photographer, but he was able to get these fabulous photographs that are just great, and they're in a book he published, and they're also ended up on one of the compilation albums for a John Lennon compilation album. And pretty cool stuff, you know.
Yeah, really. And so, I mean, I remember this is before Johnny Winter or his brother Edgar even had a record out, and you were hanging with them a lot. I remember at the studio. I remember them bopping in and out. So, which did you do? Which did you do first, Edgar or John Winter?
You know, I'm as you were just talking about that, I'm trying to remember if it was John first. We did John Dawson Winter the third. We did some live stuff for Johnny. Rick Derringer was producing it, who was from the McCoys. You know, he had that hit "Hang On, Sloopy," and he was then a producer. And we worked on that stuff, and then we worked with Edgar. I think that was second. It's a long time ago, you know. I'm trying to figure out the order of this, but it doesn't make any difference. To be able to work with those two brothers is amazing, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? I have the same feeling that it was amazing that I got to work with you, you know. Because, you know, McCracken said to me, I said, I said, it was one of the biggest compliments I ever got, and I'm not stroking myself. You know, I said to Huey, you know my style in the studio. Is there anybody that I produce similar to? He said, yeah, John Lennon. I said, why? He said, because you would come in, just like John, play the song, and then let the musicians, you know, because John knew the same thing I knew, that everybody there could play their acts better than I can, you know. And the fact, just to know as an engineer or producer, you know, what you have there, and to let them, you know, like a racehorse, to let them run, and then to know when to take in rein because it's going, you know, because these were people that hadn't recorded some of them, and we had already been in the studio for years, you know, so it's, their life was sort of in our hands, and it all worked out. One of my favorite personal acts, and you worked on it, is Tom Petty, you know. And I'm just curious, from where you sat in the chair, what was it about Tom Petty that was so magical that pulled me in, you know, from your perspective?
You know, Artie, it's one of those things. I don't mean to be vague, and I'm not trying to be, but it's one of those things, you know, in this business that you can't quite put into words. But I'll try to describe it. It's one of those things where an artist is able to create music, and it reaches millions of people. And there's something about that. I think that Tom has this thing where, first of all, his melodies are great. The sound the band makes together, the blend of the guitars and the organ and the bass and his voice with all of those instruments makes a sound. And, you know, I really like your listeners to get this, to get my opinion of this, which is, you know, everybody's so into the sound they forget about the song sometimes. And it's about the song. And he and Mike Campbell and any other writers involved, They are terrific songwriters, and they had very different and unusual songs at the time. You know, when you first heard some of those songs, you might say, well, you know, this is really different. What is this, you know? But between the melodies and the arrangement and the sound, it all comes together as a package that is one of these things that you just want to listen to over and over and over again. And, you know, the producer, Jimmy Iovine, he had a lot to do with helping them with, they worked together on the arrangements and helping them select songs. And, you know, like I say...
Well, personally, you're talking about that. Personally, I really believe, and I'm not saying it because it was you, because I know Jimmy, and I know what he had done, and I know you, and... I think a lot of stuff that he got credit for was really a lot of Shelly Yakis in there, you know.
That's nice to just say that. I really appreciate it. But, you know, it's like I say, sometimes a contribution from getting even a small contribution in a moment gets the thing to go in the right direction, gets the whole band to go in the right direction. And you know, Jimmy was really, really good at that. He had good ideas, you know, a lot of people give me a lot of credit for those albums. But, you know, there was, I wasn't the only one in the sandbox, and we did it together. And my job, really, I learned early on that I'm not the artist and I'm not the producer. And my job as an engineer is to get what's in the producer and the writers or the leader of the band's head to come out of the speaker. And that's always been my goal, is to get the essence of the band to come out of the speaker. And it's not easy. And it turns out that the sound is very, very important. The blend of the instruments is very important. That's why modern technology, digital, makes it more difficult to get that blend because everything is in the same plane. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying you have to know what you're going for. Because in digital, everything is the same plane. In analog, instruments take their own space and have their own space. And they have a certain blend that where they start rubbing together in this really cool way. Digital, you have to really work to maintain that blend. And if you don't know it should be blending, then you get all these separate little instruments, and it doesn't work well. But, you know, I came from a place where it's ingrained in my brain what stuff should sound like. And the one thing that I'm really proud of is that if you listen to the stuff that I've done, each group has their own personality. It isn't all about me, but you can hear me in there. In these groups I've worked with, and these artists I've worked with, but you can also hear the artist's personality and the personality of their music and their songs and their group, and it shines through. And I think that combination is what makes it really fun to listen to. You know.
Well, you know, it was good, Joey, because you and I just seemed to lock in and have pretty much the same feelings about what was going on, and I just. For some reason, I just always trusted you to give me what I needed, and you did, you know, and you gave me what you had is you gave me yourself, and, you know, by the way, Shelly, it's hard to keep it quiet, but do you want to say anything about what you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm really fortunate to be involved with a great company called Studio One Media, and they have my studio, and they have Aftermaster HD.
Right. Wow.
And, what this is my studio, and if you go to mystudio.net, if your listeners will go there to mystudio.net and look around and look on our board of advisors, and I think they'd be quite impressed about who is involved with us, because they think we've got the next big thing.
Well, actually, Shelley, in reality, don't you know that the next thing you do is always going to be better, because you have all the experience and successes and failures behind you, and you're so much more knowledgeable now that the odds change a lot. You know, the odds change.
I had to draw on everything I've learned in the business to be able to do the sound design for my studio. Let me just tell you briefly what it is. It's a self-contained studio that has a green screen, a Hollywood-style green screen that lights itself. There's a lot of new and innovative things. They have 27 patents applied for. And it sounds like I recorded you, except there's no engineer there. And it's the first time anything like this has been done. And it can be used for many things, like if you do your own music and you want to do an MTV-style video where you lip-sync to it, which is what everything you see on VH1, BET, MTV, it's all lip-sync. You can do that. You can also sing live over your own track. You can sing live over the music that we supply. They've made publishing deals with some just huge publishers to get the great music that you can sing over. And you can do multiple videos. It's very inexpensive. You can do multiple videos, and everyone knows someone who can edit, and you can cut them together if you want, or you don't have to. You can do a video and just put it up on our site. It's my studio. .net, and then we have aftermaster HD.com, which is Aftermaster is a new style mastering, and I just want to take a second and explain this to your audience. Everything has to be mastered. If you don't master your stuff, when it comes out of your board, your studio, your Pro Tools, your whatever you're using, it's always low level, at least sounding low level. Everything that an A&R guy gets is mastered. If your stuff comes into him or goes on iTunes and it's not mastered, it sounds like a pea next to a giant. In that comparison is where your music could fail because it sounds plain and ordinary.
Okay, let me just say one thing. Shelly, let me say one thing here, Chris. It just fits. Shelly and I hadn't seen each other, and we get together because I had given my word to a man named Jamie Gardner who had kids that were learning to play, and Shelly and I hadn't worked together, and we had lost contact, you know, and we got together, and we didn't charge anything at all. You know, it would have cost someone like $100,000 to get our services and what we put into it. And we came together, and it was also when you were doing the, you know, by the way, to capsulate what Shelly was saying, for me, layman, because I'm a writer-producer, you know, Shelly talks in a whole other world like an Einstein sound guy, and I'm a songwriter. But just imagine, you could actually go in, you could go into this pod, I'll call it a pod for lack of any other way to describe it, and actually come out with a really competitive demo, almost master level. And did you ever get it so you got the camera set up yet, Shelly, on that?
Oh, yeah. It looked amazing. You know, Larry Rickman, who's our CEO, is really the guy behind all of us in the company, pushing us to get as great as it could be. You know, anyone else would have stopped earlier and maybe the competition would have taken them over, but Larry is really, I know him a lot of years, and he believed in me and felt that I could do this for him and the company. And, you know, he really is responsible for where it is today.
Well, I just love the guy. I just love the guy because he gave you a formula and a place to put all of your knowledge to, and it worked. You know, and you talked to me about it before, and it just amazes me that anybody out there could go in and actually come out with a video and a really competitive, you know, and spend hardly anything, you know, compared to what it was cost to have musicians and be able to overdub and shoot a video or even send a postcard to someone in Afghanistan or else.
Yeah, they can. They can. And, you know, we have a whole team of people. I mean, there are people that do the video, and there are people that do the IT computer stuff. And these are all very, very talented people. And the audio team is really myself and Ari and Phil. And Larry is involved with us because he can hear really well, you know, and which is really unusual to have a CEO of a company that does is a really terrific businessman, but yet he can hear. So an unusual unusual combination in one person. But
The best decision he made was to let you run and let you do what you had to do. That's his best decision he made. You know, I don't think anybody else could have pulled it off, no matter how what Larry knew, because it was really you know, I hear it. By the way, that. It's funny because that cut we did with the band called Far Off Place, Shelly and I sat down and heard the song for the first time and went into a studio that basically didn't exist. And you know what, Shelly, out of all the 200 and something bands I played, that cut, Eleanor, which you and I heard for the first time together, is still one of the top three requested songs out of all the acts I've had, including Rock Hall of Famers on, you know.
Great.
And that was our coming back together. Let me ask you a question. Bob Seger, because I had something to do with Bob Seger, too, because of my Capitol trip. And well, how was it like working with Bob? Because I know him from a business viewpoint in other ways. So, you know.
Well, you know, I did Like a Rock with him. And, you know, you hear this coming through the speakers, and you're saying, oh, my God. Listen to this. It's amazing, and you feel humbled. I mean, I felt like, wow, listen to this guy sing. Listen to the melody in this song. Listen, and then we did a number of other things together. And you know, when you're working with somebody that talented, what do you say? You know, what can you say other than wow? It's just so great. You know, the music moves.
Well, or else you could say that's pretty good, Bob. But could you give me one more a little better? which I had the right to say if I was the producer, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Working
with him, working with talent at that level is a remarkable thing, you know. And he's another guy that just wants to make a great record, you know. And he just looks at it from the point of view of, does it sound right to him, you know? And our job is to help him get that. And that's what I've always tried to do, and I've tried to work hard for the artists I've worked with, and I think we've come up with some really good stuff. I hear it on the radio now, and you know, all these years later, I still really enjoy it. I mean, usually when I finish an album, I can't listen to it for 6 months. I've just heard it too many times by the time we've done the last mix.
Amen.
And then I can maybe I can begin to enjoy it once I start hearing it on the radio for the second time. And usually the first time what I heard in the studio is still in my head, so I can't hear it. And the second time I hear it on the radio, oh yeah, I got it now, it's working. And it's always very competitive to try to make something sound special on the radio and unique. Not that I don't mix for the radio. I mix for what sounds right to me, and it sounds good on the radio. And so, you know, it's not so easy to do, especially these days where everybody has the same tools. And see, years ago, you could make an album, you could make music, and it all had a lot of personality. You could almost always tell what studio it was done in, whether it was done in New York, whether it was done in California, whether it all has a sound. I could tell between 4 or 5 different studios in New York when something came on the radio. I could say, you know, that sounds like Record Blast. That sounds like A&R. That sounds like Mirror Sound. That sounds like Media Sound. They all had personalities. Now that personality isn't there anymore. It sounds like a lot of the music sounds like it's done by one engineer, one producer, one record label. And I think that it's just beginning now to have personality. Oh, there's always exceptions to what I'm saying. I don't want to sound like it's gospel, but you know that it's 100% that it has no personality now. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying there is music emerging that has personality, and it's nice to hear. And it's not so much of a beauty contest on the radio anymore, or TV. You don't have to be a male or female model to be able to have success, which it was like for many years, like maybe from the mid-90s till, you know, a couple of years ago. You had to look like a male or female model, and they fixed the rest in the control room. And now it's starting to get more towards people that look like regular people and have really
Shelly, you know what? I talent. You know what, Shelly? Because I came in through the Brill Building days and rose to the top, and it's just the fact that I've been telling people for years. You know what? The song, it starts with the song, and everything you do musically is supposed to get the whole picture across to people and like glue, put it together. You know, and people, I think we came off a very not great 20 years of music because people just thought if it was loud or sounded like someone else. And, you know, when we started, the song was it. If you didn't have the song, you shouldn't have even gone in the studio. You know, and we're famous together, whether you know it or not, because so what we did on with Burt Summer with his vocal, right? And what we did on They've All Come to Look for America, which Paul Simon said was the first time that anybody had ever beaten him out with a cover of one of his own songs. And we did it. And you know what? That sound that I got known for, which is really half you, you know, and half me, and the artist was 90% anyway. We just added on top of that. And when I hear God Almighty, what a great vocal sound. And I know some of your tricks, so I don't like to give them away. But, you know, just the way, what can I say, guys? You know out there that, you know, I just love Shelly. I love his work, you know, and we would be friends if we were laying bricks. It wouldn't matter. But we still have the quest, and you know, I get a lot of credit for stuff that you did, you know, because the work we did together was so much fun. Well, do you remember any time with you and me that sticks out in your head about us in the studio together?
Yeah, every time. Every time was a unique experience, Artie. Let me tell you, it was so much fun doing that music together and working on it with you. And you know, it's all part of my beginnings. So it's everything I just described to you and your listeners about how I think about it all came from those days. It was my foundation. It was, you know, it carried through and a lot of it, because of the way you hear music, because of the way Roy heard music, because of the way the other people that I work with heard music, it made the difference. But because you and I worked together, it made this, it was this combination of two guys in the control room that were just trying to make the best music they could to themselves, and we were working with each other to try to, and not against each other, try to bring out the best out of the artist that we were working with. I mean, you know, what a great thing. And I still do it to this day, and so do you. You there?
Uh-oh. Sounds like we might have lost Artie. Stand by, everybody. We're going to reestablish with him. We'll be right back.
Your mind, and that's all that's tricking you. So fall in line. Come on, babe, follow me. I'm the Pied Piper. Follow me. I'm the Pied Piper, and I'll show you where it's at. Hey, babe, can't you see?
She to say hello. She smiled up at me, then she took my hand, and we walked through the park. She simply caught my eye.
I love the flower girl.
She seemed so sweet and kind. She crept into my mind.
To my mind.
Suddenly the sun broke through.
See the sun.
I turned around, she was gone. One little flower in my hand, but I knew she had made me happy. Showed me the way to find a sunny day.
Hello, Artie Cornfield with the Spirit. You got to have spirit when you know when there's enough listeners that love music like you and a great guest and a me, whatever I do, here. And I just want to put Shelly on to take it out because I really have nothing to say that you haven't heard me say right now. And I'd rather Shelly just take it out. And Shelly, take it away, big guy. I love you so much. Thank you so much for sharing. Because anybody out there, you do not know. That people would die to work with Shelly. You know, even I'm working with Davin McCoy, and he said, do you think we can get Shelly Akis, you know? That's how much Shelly is sought after because of his love of what he does and his talent. So, Shelly, why don't you take it out, man?
Well, Ari, thank you. Artie, thank you for saying such nice things about me, and, you know, I really appreciate it. I want to just talk to your listeners just for a second, and the music business has changed a lot. All the stuff that Artie and I are talking about, the building blocks are still the same. But it's so much harder for an unsigned band or even a signed band to get themselves out there. We've come up with this Aftermaster, which is something that we would like unsigned bands and signed bands, but unsigned bands, if you send us your stuff online, we can master that for a price that you can afford and send it back to you, and you can get world-class mastering. We figured out how to do the mastering for you, get you a world-class sound without you having to pay the money that is charged by these big mastering houses, which are excellent at what they do, but most of you who are unsigned bands cannot afford it. So one of our goals here is to be able to make it so that you can get your stuff mastered, and this is a unique mastering. This isn't just any kind of mastering. This is something that really sounds like music when it's done, and it will take your product that you have and make it sound very special. And if you want to reach me, you can reach me at shellyakis@aol.com, or you can reach me at syakis@studio1media. That's one spelled out, so there'd be two O's. And if you want to send us stuff online, and we'll give you a price for it, believe me, it's extremely affordable. We're doing this for bands that are unsigned or that are on little budgets, and we are doing stuff that's pretty remarkable. All these years of experience we have put into this final product, and the world is going to hear your stuff in a different way. We can take
Shelley, let me add something to what you said, because what you did on Rattle and Hum was such incredible work, you know. You know, and you didn't have the and you didn't have this available to you when you did that, you know. And so the thought of the mad scientist, you know, that's really so brilliant at what he does, you know. You know, I just can't wait till we do some stuff together. I mean, I'm excited. It's the same thing the show's about. Do the show for free to give artists a chance to be heard, because everybody knows radio is payoff and you can't get on unless maybe you're me or a couple of other people. And what you're doing is the same thing. They could not buy you, and they cannot buy me. We're not for sale. But good music, we could do, and you've certainly come up with a great thing. And I'm so excited, and I'm so happy for you, because you're the best, man, and I love you. You know, what could I say?
Well, Artie, I feel the same way, and I miss you. And, you know, I know we're going to be doing some stuff in the future. And, you know, I don't know what to say, except I still feel the same about making music as I did when I first started. Nothing has changed after all these years, except it's even cooler to me now.
It's like a rebirth.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, get out of here. Come on. You know, this is a man who stopped his wedding just before he got married, and because it was my birthday, stopped his wedding just before he was going to tie the knot, and had everybody sing happy birthday to me, you know, and I cried because I was sitting at a table with people with names that you know, and it was so touching to me, the love that I felt, and I'm so glad that I could have Shelley on, and, you know, next thing you hear from Shelley and I is going to be something that'll blow your mind that we do together. So, and Shelley's just on the way up, and, you know, I'm just going to maintain and do what I do. And Shelley, what you're doing is you're just maintaining the excellence that you always had. So before people think we've gone totally berserk, I just want to thank you. Thank the listeners for hanging in, because we took you into a different realm, and anybody out there could have a hit record. Write the songs, get the right person, you know, to put it down the right way, and mastering is critical. And that's why when Shelley told me what he was doing, it blew me away, because that's what was missing in my equation. So thanks for giving that option there, because it gives us people more legs to work on. You know, so it's representing every producer, you know, this, you know, next year it's going to be, everybody's going to want it, you know, you have to come to you to get the right sound. And that's what I believe. So with that, I want to say to everybody, hold the light, keep the spirit, you know, peace and love through music. And, you know, and crazy guys like us are going to sit up in the studios and work 20 hours in a row. and what can I say? Shelley, I love you. Thank you so much. And for all you out there, the glitches we had, is the reaction is so much to the show that we really couldn't handle that much reaction. So thank you so much for being so loyal. And you all love music just the way we do. And that's why we're all here tonight. So with that, I say goodnight to everybody. I can't say goodbye to Shelley, because there will never be a goodbye with Shelley and I. You know, that's already written, and that was written 45 years ago. So with that, I say hold the light, keep the spirit, you know, and, by the way, vote. don't let the meanies get us, guys. Don't let the meanies get us. So, see, man, you can wrap it out. Yeah, I don't know what you have up, but what are you playing, Z-Man?
We're going to go out with Hold the Light.
Oh, good, and Shelley and I did that.
Don't let go, pull the light, it's in sight, and we'll be there day or night. We can be somewhere, hold the light. It's so hard to hold on, but you can if you try. Don't be misled by what you've been brought up to do. What I want to reach.
it's things I would like to teach. If you've seen it, better keep it, don't let go.